Of Judges. I hope that you're getting a grasp about the kinds of things that happen as the nation of Israel becomes a nation. You got to understand when those individuals making bricks out of mud, slaves in the land of Egypt, they were far removed from being a nation. I mean, you just stop and think about the fact that they had very few rights, and you know, at least on their own and everything, and so there would not be. While there might be natural leaders that are there, there's no position of leadership, so they could gain expertise in leading. And so Moses led the Israelites out of the land of Egypt. And when they got out of the land of Egypt, they crossed the Red Sea. They went down to Mount Sinai. They got the Ten Commandments and the Law of Moses. They stayed there about a year. And then they came up ready to go into the promised land. God promised Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob that He would give their descendants this land. And so that's why it's referred to as the promised land. It's the promise of God. He'd give them this land. And it was His intention for them to go there immediately after they left Mount Sinai. They were not able to do it because of their unbelief. When they arrived up at the edge of the promised land, they sent out the spies, and 12 spies, and only two of them said, "We can take the land." All 12 of them said, "It's a land that flows with milk and honey." And just in passing, they described the people, the inhabitants of that land, as being giants. And they said, "We are grasshoppers in their eyes." I'm assuming that refers to the size of them. And then the interesting thing, and he says, "In our eyes too." That's just one of those little tidbits in there. If you don't read it slow, you'll not see it. They saw themselves as grasshoppers. Instead of people energized and protected by God, they said, "We're grasshoppers in our own eyes." And I guess in relationship to the size of the giants that were in there. And the tidbit that you might help you understand something, it says the walls of the cities in that promised land reached up unto heaven. That's interesting. I remember as a child hearing the story about the Tower of Babel and them wanting to build a tower to go all the way to heaven. And I don't know if I've said it in this class, but I know I've said it. I heard that story the same time I heard Jack and the Beanstalk. And so I had a little bit of trouble when I'm, you know, 6-7 years of age trying to decide, was God afraid that they would get up to heaven and steal the goose that laid the golden egg? I had a few things that are sort of mixed up in my head in relationship to that. And so I grew up really thinking that God was concerned that they'd be able to build a tower to reach all the way to heaven. Well, first of all, there's not enough material on this earth that would extend all the way to heaven. It's a physical impossibility, but the Bible uses the word heaven to refer to where the birds fly. And so in Genesis chapter 1, the Bible says He made the birds to fly in the heavens. There was a second heaven mentioned in Genesis 1, and that is where He placed the sun and the moon and the stars. He put them in the heavens. And we talk about the planets being in the heavens. And so we talk about that. And then the Jews had a third heaven, and that is the heaven of heavens. And the way we normally use the word heaven, the opposite of hell. And that's why Paul said, "I know a man who once went up into the third heaven." But that's not, you know, it's not that there are three different levels where God abides. There's that level where the birds fly. And so the spies came back out of that land and says, "The walls reach up as high as the birds fly. There's no way we can take that." And so they wandered in the wilderness for 40 years until that entire generation of men who were above 20 years of age, who crossed the Red Sea, who were warriors, they all perished in the wilderness except two men, and that's those two spies that went in to spy out the land. Well, then Moses dies and Joshua takes them into the promised land. Now, when they arrive in the promised land, they have got to capture the promised land. And when they get into the promised land, you might be trying to memorize the names that are on the screen. We may play a game in just a minute. They get into the land and they've got to have some form of government. They do not immediately have a king on this earth. When they leave the land of Egypt, Exodus chapter 19 and verse 6, God described them as a kingdom of priests. That's interesting. They were a kingdom, but their king was God. And so what kind of government are they going to have on this earth? And so when they get the promised land, if you can just in your mind mentally get them to leave the land of Egypt, wandering in the wilderness, going into the promised land, they got to have a government. And that's what the judges were. If we'll think of the Supreme Court in our land and where the judges fit in our own governmental situation that we have, there were things that were given by principle in the law that needed interpretation sometimes, and God appointed judges. Moses appointed 70 judges when he was out there at Mount Sinai. He appointed 70 judges to help him in the judging that he was doing. So he needed help. And so God gave them judges to occupy that place of making judgments. I mean, what does a judge do? He makes judgments. But they also became the leaders of that land. And you can see how easily that would happen. Here they are now, a nomadic people who have now become, if I say the village people, don't think about the hippie group or anything like that, but they've now become people that now live in villages, in cities, and some of them cities that had walls, and they captured those cities. And now they've become people who are urbanized, but they're still farmers and still shepherds in that land. They don't have an army per se, so whenever there is an enemy that arises, sort of like in American history, when the statement was made, the British are coming, and at one time, folks were not happy for the British to coming. I think we are, because we have from England and those from the British Commonwealth, members of this church, we're glad that you've come. But you understand what I mean. When Paul Revere wrote and said the British are coming, it was the Minutemen. Who are they? They were farmers. They were not men who were military men per se, you know, we had a organized militia per se. They were just those who just went out and began to fight. And that's where the Jews are. And so there are these nations that are all around them. They've got to have a leader, and that's who the judges became. And so sometimes I think about the book of Judges, and since people give the name of the book to the books, instead of calling it the book of Judges, in my mind, I call it the book of deliverers. That's what they were. They were those that were deliverers. Now, I would like to think that we would memorize the names of the judges. We've got 7 more weeks to learn the names of 15 judges. I'm just wondering if anybody here could tell me the names of the first 4 judges with your eyes shut. That makes it a little bit harder. But there's Othniel. Let's say those 4 names together. Othniel, Ehud, Shamgar, Deborah. Now, who's after Deborah? Well, after that, after you have Othniel, Ehud, Shamgar, and Deborah, then we have who? Gideon. And Abimelech, that's his son. Now, that's as far as I want you to learn the names of the judges. If you try to memorize all 15 judges at one time, unless you've got a brain that has an IQ, you know, far above what Pete Brown's IQ is, you're not going to memorize all 15 of them at once. You'll never do it. The pygmy that ate the elephant, somebody said, how on earth can a pygmy eat an elephant? And he said, one bite at a time. And if you'll bite the judges off in just small sections, Othniel, Ehud, Shamgar, Deborah. And then if you can just get Gideon and Abimelech, that's all we're going to talk about tonight. Let's say those 6 names together. Othniel, Ehud, Shamgar, Deborah, Gideon, Abimelech. You got that? Let's do it one more time. Don't look at the screen now. Othniel, Ehud, Shamgar, Deborah, Gideon, and Abimelech. I hope you'll learn those. I think you've got to say something 7 times a day for 7 months, and you'll know it. I made up those numbers some way. Bill Hatcher used to know how many that was. But if you let's go over it, and it'll help you understand that we've got this judges that last at least 350 years, maybe a little bit longer than that. And so it's a major part of the history. And 13 of these judges, 13 of them are found in the book of Judges. There, the last two, Eli and Samuel, will be found in 1 Samuel. It'll probably help us to understand that. And so we began to look at the period of the judges. And that says judges, yes. And so we looked at chapter 1. In chapter 2, we began looking at a fellow by the name of Othniel. And last week I kept saying he was the son-in-law of Othniel. He's actually the nephew of Caleb. And let me see if I can get it right this week. He's the nephew of Caleb. Now, who's Caleb? He's one of the two men that spied out the land, says we can take the land. Who is the other man? The two men, Joshua and Caleb. And so here is this Bible character, and now, here is his nephew. And he becomes an important individual in Bible history. I think we need to recognize the importance of families being used by God generationally and generations after that. If we talk about Jerry Hopkins, where's Jerry Hopkins come from? Well, Doc and Ada Bell. Well, how far back does that go? That goes almost all the way back to the beginning of the history of this church. There's Joe Holland. Joe, your dad was a member of the church, was he not? What about your grandfather?
Right. No. Yeah.
Grandfather was. That's two of our elders. Generational type of thing. Don Hickerson, Janet's husband, used to be an elder here. He had four brothers. All five of those brothers were elders in the church. Isn't that remarkable? I was preaching in a meeting up in Mansfield, Ohio, and all of a sudden there's a Hickerson up there, and all of a sudden he knew I was from West Palm. He said, "I guess you know my brother," and I was not even aware of him. So I started talking to him about that family history. That's remarkable, isn't it? And so it ought not to surprise us if there's an Othniel, that he has a brother named, Kenaz, and it's Kenaz's son. It's not just father and sons. It's uncles and nephews. And sometimes whenever we look at ourselves, we need to recognize that our extended family can be greatly impacted by the righteousness of the lives that we live before them. Because salt of the earth and light of the world is impacted most where salt is found the most frequently and where light shines the brightest the most times. You understand what I'm saying? The salt of your life impacts those people that you're around more than it will the other individuals. And so we've got Othniel, and we've got that thing that we describe as the clock of the judges. What do we mean by that? Well, if you can think about the face of your watch, not the digital one you have, in your pocket that's sort of rectangular shaped, but I'm talking about the face of a watch, an ordinary clock. And at 12 o'clock, if you'll put the word faithfulness, what's in the book of Judges? Nearly 15 times in the book of Judges, the hands of the clock go around the clock. And so when you read, those over 300 years period about the judges, whenever you read that period, you just need to understand that the hands of that clock just keep going around, and sometimes it runs rather fast and sometimes it runs rather slow. Tonight we'll hopefully get to that session of finding that there was one period of 80 years after one of the judges that there was rest in the land. There was no oppression in the land. That's a long time for the influence of that judge to be there. But sometimes it'd be a very, 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 very short time. Sometimes, and we're going to, as we make the notes and put them on the screen, we're going to indicate how long, if the Bible tells, how long it was this judge reigned and how long the oppression was after that. Because there's that period of faithfulness. And when the clock goes around to the 3 o'clock session, you know, look at the 3 o'clock on the face of your watch. What happened? They were faithful to God, then they were unfaithful. And that's the history of mankind, is it not? The history of the Bible is the history of not people continually always being righteous and always faithful to God, but there are times whenever there is great righteousness among the Jews. Think about the time of David. That's pretty impressive, is it not? The righteousness of the Jews. And if we talk about those four righteous kings of the northern kingdom, does anybody by chance know the names of those four righteous kings? They're a little bit hard to remember. Of the southern kingdom. Did I say northern? I meant to say southern kingdom. The four righteous kings of the northern kingdom. Anybody remember the names of them? Asa. Now the way I remember that is having Bobo to help me in when we were doing, soldiers, or what we call walking through the Bible, what we called it, soldiers of Christ or whatever we call that. Just had Bobo to stand up, and I went over there and I says, "What's your name?" And he acted like he was Japanese, and he said, Asa, and the name of that king was Asa. And then Bobo came to this section right here, and I went to him, and he was patting his stomach. And he said, I'm so fat. That second righteous king is Jehoshaphat. That may not help you at all. Remember that. The only way I remember things in my head is just to put it in there tilted. We've got a visitor. I don't know if she's here tonight. Is Pat here tonight? No, not this Pat, but the visitor Pat. And I knew her name started with three letters. And 2 weeks ago, I went up, or maybe 3 weeks ago, I said, "Is your name Kay?" And I knew it was a short name. So I just went into my little box that has short names in it, and the name Kay came to the top. And I said, "Is your name Kay?" And she says, "No, it's Pat." And I thought, how on earth am I going to remember Pat's name? So I thought, if I can just pat you on the shoulder, I promise you I'll remember your name. So now I know Pat's name. That helped me to remember it. Except Sunday night I walked in, or maybe it was last Sunday morning, I walked in, I sat down behind her during the Bible class hour, and I thought, I know her. What's her? And I thought, it's Tap. and that I've decided my box is dyslexic. You can shake because I got close. I don't get any points for remembering her name, and so I saw her this week, and I called her Pat Tap. Is what I called her and everything. But so fat, Asa, Japanese Asa, so fat. And then Bobo had his hands in his pocket, shaking something in his pocket. And I said, "He has something in his pocket. What does he have?" "He has a Kia." Hezekiah. Hezekiah. I don't know if that'll help you remember that or not. I don't know if it's that important for us to remember those kings. But it will really help us if we'll understand that righteousness and faithfulness and the curve that goes up and down. And the third one, and I walked up to Bobo and he's just going, "Oh, oh." I said, "Why are you sighing?" And he said, "Josiah." So his name is Josiah. I don't know if that helps or not. But you've got 19 kings, and if you don't put something with each one of them, I just don't think you'll be able to remember them unless you've got one of those minds that's like a tar bucket. Anything that touches a tar bucket inside or out will stick to it. I don't know if you've worked with tar at all, but there's some people that have heads that are like tar buckets. You put it in there and it, and I don't know if that, and I don't know really how important that is, but I believe this clock is important, don't you? this picture of this clock, of those people being faithful to God. And then, having been faithful to God, they then turn to idolatry. And then there is that oppression that comes. And that is those Canaanite nations that were there that they did not drive out. And so at the 6 o'clock face of your own, on the face of your clock, you can put oppression, you can put overtaken by the nations. They paid taxes sometimes. The nations came in, they took their possession, they allowed them to stay in the land, but they were not slaves per se, but they were subject to those nations. They were oppressed by those nations. And after they were oppressed by those nations, they repented and turned to God. And so God heard them, and God raised up that deliverer. They were delivered by judges. And evidently, as long as that judge was there, and sometimes after that judge was there, they were then faithful to God. But if you'll get these things in your mind, in fact, I would encourage you, I don't know how much you write in your Bible, but if I would go to that front page of the book of Judges in my Bible, and I'd write this circle. I would put pretty much what we have on the screen right at the top of the pages of the introduction of the book of Judges. It'll help you as you read the book of Judges. It'll help you understand human nature. It'll help you have a grasp of human nature and how people act and how people respond. And this picture is the picture of the Jewish nation. And in some respects, it's a picture of America. Whenever, there's been a 9/11, when there's been real adversity, we turn to God. You know, if I say December the 8th, 1941, probably nobody in this room was alive back then. But I imagine there's a great period of calling upon God. If I'm not mistaken, Pearl Harbor was on a Sunday. Am I right about that? It was on a Sunday. And so many went to church. And I bet you on December the 14th, so many more went to church. Think about the Depression in America. Do you know the period after the Depression, the 30s and the 40s? There was a revival of devotion to God in this land, and that's where our grandparents were. Perhaps great-grandparents for some of the younger ones here. But that's the world they grew up in, and there was righteousness. And people were closer to God. I've got an older cousin who said, when I was 5 or 6 years of age, my parents didn't have a house, and I was living with my grandmother, and every night she'd cook a big supper. And when she cooked a big supper, she would give it to me and says, now you carry this food to this family and this food to this family and this food to this family. It is my job, 5 or 6 nights of the week to deliver the food. And she said, I hated the winter months because it really, really got dark in a hurry. And I was scared to death of the dark. And she said, I'd just run as fast as my legs would take them. Now you imagine that older cousin of mine growing up in that kind of environment and the spirituality, is there any wonder that she's still faithful to God? That's that generational type of thing when you grow up in that kind of environment. Let me just stop and make one other statement in view of some comments I heard last week. If you cannot hear what I'm saying in this class, would you hold your hand up to your ears? And everybody except Joe, would you hold your hand up to your ears? I can speak louder, and so I want everybody to be able to hear what I'm saying. So anytime, even when I'm preaching a sermon, you may have to hold up both hands to your ears and flap your wings. But I promise you, I will notice you in relationship to that. But that's the history. Now, I want us to just take, some time, and I know that we're spending some time covering some things that we've already covered, But look in the book of Judges and look at what I've said to you is summed up in chapter 2, beginning in verse 7. And we're just going to read about 10 verses together, maybe a few more than that, to have a word picture of the things that we're describing. The Bible says, Judges chapter 2 and verse 7. Did I say Joshua? Judges chapter 2 and verse 7. So the people served the Lord all the days of Joshua and all the days of the elders who outlived Joshua, who had seen all the great works of the Lord which he had done for Israel. Now you've got to understand, Joshua was an old man when they go into the promised land. You know, he's 40 years in the wilderness. Some of them were only in the wilderness, you know, for 3 or 4 years, or maybe, well, a year before they went into the promised land. So we've got some youngsters in there compared to the age of Joshua. And so all the days of Joshua, and then that generation that was there, we're not talking about Joshua's generation, we're talking about that next generation. And so they were faithful to God. Now we got to the third generation, if we count Joshua the first one. And it says, verse 10, when all that generation had been gathered to their fathers, another generation arose after them who did not know the Lord nor the works which he had done for Israel. Now they forgot about him. The children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord and served, the New King James says, the Baals, B-A-A-L-S. I think the old King James says Baal, does it? Or does it say the Baals? That's the idols. What did God told them to do about all those idols? You go in there and you tear them down and all the high places, the mountaintops where they had their idols and altars for their idols, you tear them down and don't you even call their names. Don't make mention of these gods at all. Well, they didn't do it. They did not drive out all of the nations that were there. And they served the Baals. And they forsook the Lord God of their fathers who had brought them out of the land of Egypt. And they followed other gods from among the gods of the people who were all around them. And they bowed down to them and they provoked the Lord to anger. They forsook the Lord and served Baal and Ashtaroths. Male and female gods, primarily of the Philistines. Remember, David is going to later fight Goliath of the Philistines. They're just one of those nations there. They did not drive out. And the anger of the Lord was hot against Israel, so he delivered them into the hands of the plunderers who despoiled them, and he sold them into the hands of their enemies all around, so that they could no longer stand before their enemies. Wherever they went out, the hand of the Lord was against them for calamity, as the Lord had said and as the Lord had sworn to them, and they were distressed. Mine says they were greatly distressed. Everywhere they went, the Lord was angry against them. Nevertheless, the Lord raised up judges who delivered them out of the hands of those who plundered them. Yet they would not listen to the judges, but they played the harlots with other gods and bowed down to them. They turned quickly from the way in which their fathers walked and obeying the commandments of their fathers. They did not do so. And when the Lord raised up judges for them, the Lord was with the judge and delivered them out of the hands of their enemies all the days of that judge. For the Lord was moved to pity by their groanings because of those who oppressed them and harassed them. And it came to pass when that judge was dead. It sounds almost like what we read about when Joshua was dead. When that judge was dead, they reverted and behaved more corruptly than their fathers by following other gods to serve them and bowed down to them. They did not cease from their own doings, nor from their stubborn ways. The Lord was anger of the Lord was hot against Israel, and he said, because this nation has transgressed my covenant, which I commanded their fathers, and they've not heeded my words, I will no longer drive out the nations before them any of the nations which Joshua had left behind, so that through them I may test Israel whether they will keep the ways of the Lord. And that last statement is part of the reason there's adversity in our lives. Count it all joy when you fall into divers temptations, into different trials. How? All joy? Something's happening in my life, something's happening in your life, and count it all joy. That's what James 1 says. Knowing this, that the trying of your faith produces steadfastness, patience. And when there's adversity in your life, and you've had to deal with adversity of your in your life, it makes you more steadfast. Just like the individual who lifts weights and who pulls up against the weight, which is the adversity in our illustration, his muscles are built. So when we fight the adversities in our lives, I cannot believe that bell. When we fight adversities in our lives, we're made to be stronger. And then he says, now let patience have its perfect work. Those are weird words. Let patience reach maturity, and you will be complete and entire, lacking in nothing. Where spirituality come from? The storms of life. And you find me a spiritual man in the Bible who did not have adversity in his life. People who have a lot of money don't have a whole lot of need for God. How many church buildings are there over in Palm Beach? Next time you drive over there, I believe there's one about every third block you'll find a church building. No, we don't need God. But go back to the depression in America, the thing I was talking about before. And you'll find a time of great spirituality. Why? The trying of your faith produces steadfastness. And whenever you are tried and your faith is tried, you are made stronger and you become complete, lacking in nothing. God is not going to allow us to be tempted above that which we're able to bear, and we ought to be thankful for that. But we need to understand that adversity is not always a bad thing in our lives. Properly used, it turns out to be a blessing. Count it all joys when you fall into divers temptation. So here's where we're headed. We're going to talk about Othniel. There's not a whole lot in there to talk about Othniel. And this is where we'll go next week. Here are the facts about Othniel. We're not going to leave them up there long for you to copy. And there's Ehud. And we're not going to leave those up there long enough for you to copy those. That's next week. We got a good picture of them in Nobel. Everyone's going to make a picture of the screen and everything. And here's Shamgar. One verse is all there is about Shamgar. It's interesting, and that's where we're headed. And so what we're going to do is go around this circle. And so we're going to cover sometimes, some weeks, we'll cover Ibzan, Elon, Abdon. They got two or three verses each. We'll cover those in a hurry. And Tola and Jair. Those five names are five of the ten judges. And so that only leaves us eight judges of the 13 judges in this book to look at. And, well, you put Shamgar in there, that only leaves us seven judges. And we've got 7 weeks to cover these seven judges other than those that just have just a brief mention. Shamgar, got the meaning of his name. We've got the nations that he fought, the Philistines. We learned what weapon he used. He had an AK-47. And he took that AK-47 and he took care of those Philistines. You see what's on the screen? If you don't know what an ox goad is, just make sure you come and we'll tell you what an ox goad is. And one man with a stick, a long rod that has a point on the end that you stick in the back of the leg of an ox. And the way I remember is it makes the ox goad. I know that's a misspelled word. Yes, Mickey.
Stephen Miller just texted and said his nephew died.
All right. Stephen Billich's nephew just died.
Oh.
And so let's have a prayer then, and I think we'll go ahead and have that prayer. Novell, how about you leading that prayer, if you would?